Hey everyone, I'm Adam Rippon. Welcome back. Let's get right to the show. Like I said before, welcome back. It's good to have you back. Really is. I mean that from the bottom of my heart to the top of my head. I want to start this episode out with something I saw online. I know, shocking. It's this video I saw online, and what I want to talk about is not the video, but I do need to describe it to you so that you can get the full picture of what I will tell you after I tell you about the video and why I'm feeling a certain type of way. This video that I saw was of this young guy, and he starts the video and he goes, "I'm 29 years old and I have the mansion. I have the garage filled with my dream cars, the Maserati, the Lamborghini, the G-Wagon." And he's showing all of this. And he goes to his upstairs and he goes, "I have the big pool. And how do I do it? You know, I'm at this point, I'm hooked. How do you do it? You're 29. You have it all." And he goes, "I buy the viral videos and I just repost them. And that's how I make 30K a month." And at this point, I know, you know, I don't know what he's trying to do, but he's trying to sell a Ponzi scheme of how you also can buy viral videos and just repost them. What? I don't even know what that means. So in essence, basically, you're a bootleg poster, right? You're on Canal Street selling bootleg DVDs. Like, that's basically what's happening, and you're making 30K a month, supposedly. Now, none of this matters, because this is usually when I just, you know, swipe to the next video, as I do, as I'm known to do, but I'm compelled to hear the rest of what he has to say. But he's showing what he's making on YouTube, posting these videos that he bought, and he goes, "I don't even do anything. This is just what I do. I make 30K a month." And if you want to make 30K a month, all you need to do is comment down below YT and I will show you how it's done. Like I said, at this point, this is where I'm just, yeah, I'll scroll. But I don't know what compelled me to do what I did next, but I'm glad I did it. And that is, I opened the comments. Whose name do I see at the top of the comments? You will never guess. The first comment is capital Y, capital T, from the real Deborah Messing. I did not stutter. Deborah Messing, Will and Grace's Deborah Messing, is commenting on this video, YT, because she wants to know how she can make 30K every month buying viral videos and reposting them to her Instagram or to her YouTube. And then that got me thinking, wasn't she making a lot more money on Will and Grace? And I looked it up and she was making $250,000 an episode. I can't tell you the range of emotions I went through when I saw the real Deborah Messing is commenting on this video because she wants to be a part of the action. She watched this video and she went, "There's no way I'm missing out on this opportunity." Meanwhile, she's for sure a multimillionaire, still making residuals off of the hit show she was on for years. It's a cautionary tale. Because it doesn't matter what kind of success you have, you are still susceptible to joining a Ponzi scheme from a 29-year-old who lives in Atlanta, but he's living the dream. He's got the cars, he's got the pool, and now he's got Deborah Messing in his claws, in his clutches. Even if you make $250,000 an episode on a hit television series for years on end, this is how the rich get richer, you know? They make a lot of money, but they're looking for just a side hustle. And it makes me feel good that Deborah Messing thought that her side hustle could be buying viral videos. Because she's had enough with work. She's worked enough. She's worked all those long hours it takes to film an episode of Will and Grace that she wants to just kick back now. I get it. Deborah, I get it. It's time to just kick back, reap the rewards of your success, and to buy other people's videos and repost them on your YouTube channel and make $30,000 a month. I've been thinking about that a lot recently, probably too much. But the thing that really scared me, it was, he said, comment YT, and she did not miss a beat. Capital Y, capital T, post. Now that's terrifying. And that's how I know we should keep an eye on the stock market. We should keep an eye on our investments. We should be saving money. Because if Deborah Messing is out here peddling for pocket change to her, $30,000 pocket change, you're making $250 an episode. What do you need $30,000 for? A sweatshirt? I don't. This is sort of along the lines of older people falling for AI videos. You know, not to reference this podcast, but to reference it, I have been a coochie doctor for 13 years, and nobody believes me when I say this. Because you're a computer-generated image. That's why nobody believes that you've been a coochie doctor for 13 years. And that's why Deborah Messing believes she can make $30,000 a month buying viral videos. And you know, I hope it works out for her. But I also hope that if you're out there selling your viral videos for cheap, he also said this, I buy the viral videos for cheap. Now, if you're out there selling your viral videos for cheap, just know Deborah Messing is the one who's buying them. It's the Wild West out there. And I want you to know that. Something else I want to talk about is recently on the news, I've seen a lot of Kevin O'Leary, who is one of the sharks on Shark Tank. And I don't know about you, but I live in a Shark Tank house. When I see a product I like on Shark Tank, I'm ordering it. I'm not falling for a pyramid scheme on Instagram, but I am falling for a good sales pitch on Shark Tank. And you know what? I'm not ashamed of it. Kevin O'Leary is going on, I think I've seen him on CNN, where he's talking about that he's loving Elon Musk finding all of this fraud and shutting it down. And, you know, he's being interviewed as a business expert, a financial guru, right? And I'm not even going to talk about Elon Musk. We've all heard way too much about him. I never need to hear from him ever again. What I want to talk about is Kevin O'Leary. Like I said, I'm from a Shark Tank household. And if you're from a Shark Tank household, you know that Kevin is the shark you don't want to make a deal with. If every shark is out and Kevin is in, he's going to rip you off. And he's always going to say, I'm going to blow it up on social. And then you go on social and you see his social media and it's a travesty. He's just not the shark you want to make a deal with. I think he's on the show as a character because he's always saying something, you know, cuckoo, nuts. I'm not laughing. There is an audience that will laugh at a Kevin O'Leary quip. It is not me, but there is an audience. But this got me thinking of, he's not the shark we should be asking these questions. Because if I had a product, my dream shark is Lori Grenier. I need to give you a bit of background on Shark Tank. Because Lori's bread and butter was always QVC and Bed Bath & Beyond. Which obviously Bed Bath & Beyond is gutted. Which I think is sad. You know, I get it. Bed Bath & Beyond was basically your brick and mortar Amazon. The thing about Lori is that you could come in there with a piece of shit and she's going to go, I know a huge market potential for this piece of shit and I'm going to sell the hell out of this piece of shit. And she does. A product that Lori bought that every shark went, I don't really think so. Scrub Daddy. Now, Scrub Daddy is a sponge. That's it. It's just a sponge. She bought a sponge. That's a multi-million dollar company now. So Lori's not somebody to be messed around with. Another shark you definitely want to deal with is Mark Cuban. Not me, though. I think Mark Cuban is a great shark, but I think Mark Cuban is busy. And so I'm worried that he's not going to take the time that I'm going to want a shark to dedicate to my product. But Lori's going to take that time because she made a sponge worth $10 million. And she speaks Mandarin Chinese. And so I'm not worried about my product, especially when it goes abroad and when she's talking to distributors. Do I think Kevin O'Leary is doing that? No, I think he's running his mouth on CNN saying that he's loving the fraud. It's also good when you can get multiple sharks. But again, you don't want Kevin near that deal. And this is just my impression. You don't want Kevin's sticky little fingers charging you a royalty. You just don't, you don't want that. You want him far away from it. You want him to give you a deal, but as a way to kind of negotiate a better deal with a different shark. You want to use him as a tool, as a pawn, but you don't want to put pen to paper with him. That's just my opinion. You know, maybe I'm wrong. He's got more money than me, but I don't really care. He's bald. I think your real dream combination of sharks is when you get Lori really into your product and she kind of moves her eyes, they kind of jet over to Mark Cuban. And when he gets interested, you want those two together. I think that's your best deal. When you get Mark and Lori together, oh, that thing's about to blow up. It's about to be a success. But when you got all the sharks kind of putting their notebooks down, tilting their heads, and then you have Kevin O'Leary licking his lips, run. One more thing I want to talk about, and then we can move on to some voicemails, is the price of a vanilla latte. Now, I don't know when it happened. I don't know why it happened, but we became numb to the way a latte is priced. Now, for a cup of black coffee at your normal coffee shop, I feel like you can get that $3, right? $3, $4. I think when you get to the $5 mark, you're kind of pushing it. It's just black coffee. But when we get to the lattes, that's when things go, for me, completely awry. When you're getting a latte, we're now in a different price bracket. Starting at $7, going up to $9. I've seen a vanilla latte for $12. And there's just something where when you've seen it a million times, you just become used to it and you go, that's just the way it is. But when you break it down, and you know I'm breaking it down, I'm thinking to myself, huh. Well, the reason this is more expensive is because it has milk. Famously, many, many years ago, if I was going to Starbucks, I was getting a tall black coffee in a grande cup, filling the rest up with milk, which is essentially I was making a latte. But now that I'm an adult, I'm getting a real latte. I want the milk foamed, right? I want the milk frothed. And I want that vanilla syrup in there because there's only so much three packets of Splenda can do. It can do a lot, but it does just not have the vanilla bean taste, which I feel like is essential to the vanilla latte. But now when we get to the price, I'm going, well, it's the milk that makes it more expensive. But if I go to the grocery store, even if I'm going to a Whole Foods and I'm getting an organic half gallon of milk, half a gallon, that one Horizon brand, you know what milk I'm talking about. It's in the red cardboard container. It has the cow with the smile. And that is consistently across the board $4.99. So if a half gallon of milk is $4.99, I don't get how I'm getting a cup of milk in this vanilla latte and we've boosted the price from $3 from a black coffee to $9 for a vanilla latte. Alarm bells. And then on top of that, would you like to tip 18% or 25%? Whew. Here's a tip. For me, I think I'll just make it at home. Because for $9, I can get a gallon of milk. Do you know how many vanilla lattes that is? That's many, many vanilla lattes. It's more than one. I don't really have anywhere to go with what I'm saying. But one place I won't go is to my local cafe. Because I will be $9 back. Sometimes it's worth it, though. And you know, and sometimes, now I'm playing devil's advocate to the latte industry, because sometimes I'm going, you know, this is the price I need to pay. This is just the price I need to pay for a bit of, for the ambiance, for the chance to sit somewhere outside even. But again, it's because I'm trying to reason the cost of how I can buy half a gallon of milk for $5, but I'm paying $9 for a cup of it in my black coffee.
Please leave your message after the tone.
I'm calling to ask about one time you mentioned that you really love the smell of Fabuloso because you're from Pennsylvania and that means you like strong scents. So I was wondering if you could speak a little bit more about why you think people from Pennsylvania like strong scents.
This is an easy one. Of course, I can elaborate on why do I think people from Pennsylvania like strong scents. To me, it's easy. Pennsylvania, at least where I'm from, coal mining town. Now, I don't know if they had Fabuloso back in the day, but I can imagine that after a long day in the mines, something that would smell really good would be purple Fabuloso. And, you know, I've never been in a coal mine. That's actually not true. When I was young, I would go to the Scranton Steamtown Mall, and you could take a train into the coal mine or to the coal mines, and you could get a tour of them. In the coal mines, they would have mannequins of coal miners in there that looked like they were mining for coal. And I can just imagine if that I was in that dark space day in, day out, that some people would want a nice cold beer at the end of the day. But what I would want is a nice clean floor that smelled like Fabuloso. And I think this just comes from maybe being a bit landlocked. Pennsylvania, the Keystone State, not surrounded by a body of water, mostly surrounded by a body of land. And I think that not having some sort of ocean or sea breeze locks you in and you go, I need a different scent. And that's why I think where I'm from, you want the smell of bleach. You want something to smell like the YMCA. You want the smell of Fabuloso. You want to smell like you are in a fresh meadow. Even though you're surrounded by pine trees, you know, I didn't live that far from the Poconos. We had rolling hills, beautiful scenery. We lacked in sense, common sense, and sense of smells, lacked both. And so when you're driving down the 81, or if you're on the Pennsylvania Turnpike, and when you get off that turnpike, the only thing you can see is a Days Inn, a Shell gas station, and a Sheetz that they built in 2005 that everybody still calls the new Sheetz. You go down the drag a little bit more. There is what used to be a Vince the Pizza Prince in a building that nobody can really lease anymore because it's in the shape of a castle. And then you go down a little bit further, you're going to pass on your left a Pizza Hut that, you know, you need to pull into the parking lot to get to the Pizza Hut. It's on a hill. I hope I'm painting the picture correctly. But one day somebody drove into the front of the Pizza Hut and it never recovered. You know, that was a sad day because that's where I could kind of redeem my personal pan pizza from some sort of award system that I did at my school. I don't remember what it was. I needed to read a book or something or multiple books. But then I could redeem my personal pan pizza at this Pizza Hut. And I can close my eyes. I can still see the salad bar. But I can't smell the salad bar. But I can smell, when I close my eyes, the bleach of the bathroom. And I just think that if you're from Pennsylvania, you have this nostalgia for the thick, deep, penetrating smells.
Please leave your message after the tone.
Because you're an Olympian, I feel like you need to cover the topic of why swimmers, like professional Olympic swimmers, don't swim in a medium that's harder, more dense than water. Like, not jello. Something between water and jello, a colloid, if you will. Is it because that would be bad for humans? I think it would help training. Forget weighted vests and all that. Same with ice skating. Like, get on something slicker. Like, you got to train. Runners train at elevation. What are swimmers in ice skating do? Find a harder medium.
Now, before I break down this call, I want to applaud you for your ingenuity, for your thinking outside of the box, for your trying to push American athletes to the top through innovation. Next, I want to say this is a great reason of why we shouldn't defund the Department of Education. Because why don't swimmers train in jello? And to be honest, I wish I had a clearer answer for you. I don't really have anything to add to this. All I want to say is I love the way your brain works, but I'm scared of you because there is a part of you that is serious. But I think we seriously need to ask ourselves the question of why aren't our swimmers training in Jell-O? Why isn't Katie Ledecky in a vat of Jell-O swimming for her life? And I think that that's a question only Katie Ledecky can answer. And I don't know what the answer would be. I can imagine that you might die in a vat of 9 foot deep Jell-O, but you would be strong. And with that, I think that's a great way to end this episode of the podcast by Adam Rippon, who is me and is from Pennsylvania. Thank you guys so much for listening to this episode of the podcast by Adam Rippon. Make sure you leave us a 5-star review wherever you listen to your podcasts. If you want to call the podcast and leave a voicemail, you can. Our phone number is 310-909-7117. Don't be shy. Give us a call. That's it for now. We'll see you here next time on the podcast.